Support for The Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from McLean Middleton, New Hampshire's largest law firm. For over 100 years, they've been committed to their clients, community, and colleagues. Locations in Manchester, Portsmouth, and Concord, New Hampshire, and Woburn and Boston, Massachusetts. Learn more at McLean.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's Oscar season, but as Hollywood's biggest night approaches, the film industry itself is getting mediocre reviews. First for high-budget movies that flopped, like the much-anticipated Star Wars movie or the disastrous Cats, and second for this year's Best Director nominees. Once again, the Academy is facing widespread criticism that it seems only able to recognize director talent if that director is a white male. Today in The Exchange, 2019 in the movies. Let's hear from you. What was your favorite film last year and perhaps least favorite? And how has streaming changed your movie viewing habits? We'd love to hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. With us again to talk about movies is Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. Tom, a big welcome back. Thank you so
much. Thanks, Laura. Good to see you.
And also with us, Amy Diaz, editor at the Hippo Press, where she also reviews movies. And Amy, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
So let's have our own little version of the Oscars right here with you guys getting to be the Academy. I want you to give me your top three for, let's start with Amy, Best Picture. You pick it.
I think mine would be Little Women, The Farewell, and Knives Out.
Little Women, The Farewell, and Knives Out. We'll talk about those movies in a second. But go ahead, Tom. You pick it.
What I opted to do, since you gave us a little advance notice on this, was I went for ones that I thought weren't nominated, that were particular personal favorites of mine. So they're not great, but I thought Shazam was loads of fun. If we're just going to talk about sort of amusing films. And then certainly I thought The Upside was overlooked. This was released in January.
I haven't even heard of that one.
Bryan Cranston plays a paraplegic, and Kevin Hart is his kind of manservant.
Wow.
And it's a social class issue. I thought The Upside was terrific. And Yesterday, I thought, was horribly overlooked. I loved that one.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned Shazam. Because the Marvel Comics people, and I don't know if that was a Marvel movie.
That was DC.
That was DC. Okay. The Marvel Comics fans in my house always say, how come the Academy Awards never recognize the fun movies that everyone goes to see? Right, Tom? So I appreciate you getting that in there. Okay. And directing. Amy, your top three.
Well, yes. I was one of those who agreed with the congratulations to those men sentiment of, you know, it should be not just male directors. Greta Gerwig, who directed Little Women, she was so good and put such an interesting, her voice and her vision. I would definitely have nominated her. Lulu Wang, who did The Farewell. So this was the movie that starred Awkwafina and kind of looks at a story, multi-generational story, a woman who's mostly grown up in America and is going back to China and has one foot in both cultures. And then Laureen Scafaria, who wrote and directed Hustlers, which this was the heartbreak for a lot of, there's a podcast I listened to where they were like, the heartbreak of the Oscars was that Jennifer Lopez was not nominated for supporting actress. She gave a great performance in Hustlers, which is a good movie all the way around.
How about you, Tom?
I think Greta Gerwig should be the poster child for talent that was not nominated. I also think Claire Denis, who directed High Life. This was the science fiction film where the father and his child are kind of stranded out in space. And then Danny Boyle for Yesterday again. I'm a big Yesterday pusher, I guess.
Well, that's okay. And so this is so interesting because some of these movies have gotten a lot of attention, but others absolutely have not. Let's talk a little bit about Yesterday. So, Amy, just remind us what this movie is about.
Well, so this is a fun movie that I really liked, too, and thought, like, should not have been ignored. So this movie, there's a singer who is kind of down on his luck, and he gets in a car accident at exactly the same time. The power goes out all around the world. And then the power comes back on and it kind of reboots the world and everything's a little different. And one of those differences, there were no Beatles. So only he, I think it's Himesh Patel who plays the singer, only he can remember the Beatles and the songs of the Beatles. And he's a singer. So he starts singing these songs as though they were his own and gains all this fame. And what I loved about that movie, I agree, that like that was such a fun and sort of joyful movie, is it takes the music of the Beatles and kind of separate from the band, and you get to consider, like, what is that music like if you heard it fresh today?
Wow.
What would it sound like? What would those songs mean to you? And it did that so beautifully and told such a nice story and had a nice little love story with Lily James was in it. She's maybe best known for Downton Abbey and Cinderella. She was the love interest.
Well, I'm going to play a little clip from the trailer for Yesterday, and then I'll let you talk about it too, Tom, since clearly you love that movie. Let's hear a little bit from Yesterday.
Yesterday. It's one of the greatest songs ever written.
Well, it's not Coldplay. It's not Fix You.
Do you genuinely not know who the Beatles are?
Genuinely.
Then I'm in a really, really, really complicated situation.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me.
Sorry, I'm just listening to Jack's new song.
What's this one called?
Leave It Be.
Let It Be.
Well, rock on, Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Go ahead, Tom.
I love the film. Patel, I thought, was overlooked. Possibly. I mean, he was very good. Was it Academy nod quality? Maybe not. But I enjoyed the film both because I'm not a big Beatles fan, but as Amy said, it's fun to hear different renditions. And for some reason, I particularly like finding out that really good actors, one of my personal favorite films is Moulin Rouge. So finding out that really good actors also have really good voices. Because I'm surprised they haven't released the soundtrack just to Yesterday, and maybe they have. But I thought his versions of all these songs were just terrific.
Well, I want to pick up on something you said and ask both you and Amy, Tom. Academy nod quality. So this is subjective. And as I said a moment ago, I'm always asked, how come they don't nominate movies that are fun and everybody goes to see? So what is Academy nod quality?
I was trained in Hollywood and worked there for quite a while. And probably one of my biggest disappointments was learning the reality that I think everybody knows now is that it's just a big, primarily boys club, the Academy is. And they nominate all their friends.
Here we are in 2020.
Driven. Exactly. It's financially driven. You notice that however many years ago it was that they expanded the Best Picture from 5 to 10 because you increase your box office 20% if you get an Academy nod. And so I think it's really, we mentioned off air beforehand, and I'll jump into it a little bit and show how intelligent I am, that the way the Academy nominates things is in each individual category. Directors will nominate directors. Cinematographers nominate cinematographers. So the top five, and then the rest of the Academy votes on those.
So the idea is, who knows better what makes best director than a fellow director? But then it does get very clubby, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Do you want to jump in, Amy? What is Academy nod quality?
You know, I think timing has a lot to do with it. If you know, this happens every year. You look down at the list, and most of the things are going to have been released in the last month or so. A few things maybe in fall. You know, there were some really good, there was a great performance. You know, he mentioned one in January. I really loved Gloria Bell. This starred Julianne Moore. And I think that was like March. So it might have happened 10 years ago. And when it comes time to, you know, pick a nomination, because I think things just get forgotten. And so it's the thing that happened recently. You know, I've been listening to a lot of Oscar podcasts talking about, you know, potential winners. And a lot of people touch on that with 1917. Like, that is why 1917 is getting, you know, all this attention, is kind of the one to beat at this point, is because it came out sort of just as award season was starting and it gets all that attention.
And if you look in the trades, you'll obviously see before the Oscar nods come out, for your considerations. That's basically telling the Academy, oh, don't forget about this. I always thought those ads were silly.
Well, both of you mentioned frustration this year that the clubbiness of the Academy Awards doesn't seem to have changed that much from the days you were working there, Tom. And there's been a lot of criticism this year. I want to play a little spoof from Saturday Night Live. Here's Melissa Villaseñor. She came on the sort of news update portion of the show, kind of making fun of the very male aspect of the Best Director category in particular this year. Let's hear.
Manson, Hitler, white male rage. World War I, cause of white male rage. Little Women, big performances, but Greta Gerwig, some cause of white male rage. Buzz and Woody, at it again, it's white male rage.
OK, Okay, there does seem to be, Amy, a lot of white male rage at the Oscars this year. I mean, you got Joker, you've got The Irishman. There's a lot of sort of angry white guys running around.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In Little Women, there is a conversation between Amy and Joe where they talk about what makes a story important? What makes something worth writing about? Is it just if you write about the domestic lives of women, does that make it important? Because then it's a, you know, writing about it makes it a thing worth writing about. And you know, that's, it's almost like Greta Gerwig was talking directly to like what was about to happen. You know, that some stories, Farewell and the story of the Awkwafina character, that Hustlers and the story of the Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu characters, that Little Women just wasn't going to be treated quite the same as the gangsters of The Irishman or the, you know, angry loner of Joker.
So stories about women and their families and how they navigate the world still aren't seen as much as Academy nod quality.
I feel like maybe they're considered, for women, sort of the way that some stories are, oh, that is a rom-com, and so it's over there.
Or a kids movie or whatever.
Exactly.
It's sort of categorized.
And it's not maybe seen as important, capital I, in the same way. Even though, I mean, you heard the audience reaction when she said that thing about Greta Gerwig. I kind of feel like it is a truth universally acknowledged, to steal from Jane Austen, that, you know, Greta Gerwig produced a great movie, and everyone kind of thought she deserved more recognition for that.
Tom, you brought this up. You worked in Hollywood a long time ago, and you're still seeing this.
Yeah, I see. I would approach this with on two sides. One is, as Amy addressed, popularity and box office. I think there are two sides to motion pictures. One is the escapism. And so do I want to escape into a world where I'm being taught something, such as with Little Women, or just seeing stuff blown up? Then there's the art aspect and the cultural aspect. And that's where I think, unfortunately, often they get limited box office. Who's going to make more money, Little Women or The Avengers Endgame? Unfortunately. And so I think it's, if we're looking to change viewers' habits, and I once again will remind our listeners in the audience that if this is something that is valuable to you, Hollywood listens to the dollar. So go support Gerwig. Go support films like that if you're wanting to see more of them.
Well, I went to see Little Women and I barely got in. The place was
packed.
There was a line
too.
Out the door.
And look at Frozen 2, co-directed by a woman, $1.5 billion worldwide thus far.
Well, since we've been talking a lot about Little Women, and it did get nominated for in many categories, let's play a little bit. In this clip, it begins with Meryl Streep playing the imperious Aunt March, talking with Joe, played by Saoirse Ronan.
You mind yourself, dearie. Someday you'll need me, and you'll wish you had behaved better.
Thank you, Aunt March, for your employment and your many kindnesses, but I intend to make my own way in the world.
Oh, well, no one makes their own way. Not really. Least of all a woman. You'll need to marry well.
But you are not married, Aunt March.
Well, that's because I'm rich.
And there's a lot of that in this movie, Amy, about, you know, the role of women, especially at that time, during the Civil War, and how still dependent they were on husbands.
There is. And I actually thought the movie, and Greta Gerwig also did the screenplay and was nominated for adapted screenplay. And I kind of think you see her work coming in here, where she did a really good job of presenting those as true to the time. You know, like nobody goes off and runs for senator.
Yeah, she's not modernizing it.
Exactly. But also presenting them in a way that is still understandable. The pull between family and a career. And wanting a family. And at one point, Joe finds herself feeling very lonely and just not wanting to be alone. And so it's like she's expressing desires that are, you know, they're modern, but they're still true to the story and the time. And I thought that was one of the things that made the movie really impressive.
Well, here's another little bit on that same theme. Here's Florence Pugh, who I think was nominated for supporting actress in this film, playing Amy. She's talking with Laurie, who's their neighbor, who they all love. And he's played by Timothy Chalamet.
I've always known I would marry Rich. Why should I be ashamed of that?
It's nothing to be ashamed of, as long as you love him.
Well, I believe we have some power over who we love. It isn't something that just happens to a person.
I think the poets might disagree.
Well, I'm not a poet. I'm just a woman. And as a woman, there's no way for me to make my own money. Not enough to earn a living or to support my family. And if I had my own money, which I don't, that money would belong to my husband the moment we got married. And if we had children, they would be his, not mine. They would be his property. So don't sit there and tell me that marriage isn't an economic proposition, because it is. It may not be for you, but it most certainly is for me.
Again, that's a clip from Little Women, which has been nominated in many categories in this year's Oscars awards ceremony, coming up not this Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, but next Sunday. Today in the Exchange with the Academy Awards coming up soon, we're looking back at 2019 in movies and what it reflects. And we'd love to hear from you. What was your favorite film last year? Did you have a least favorite? Did you walk out of a movie theater? Also, how has the increased availability of streaming services and a lot of Oscar-nominated movies on streaming services like Netflix changed the way that you watch? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. So I started out letting you guys play the role of the Academy. You gave me your top three for Best Picture and Best Directing. How about Best Actor? Tom, how would you pick that category? Who would you put in that category?
I completely agree with Pitt. I was not crazy about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I thought it was sort of Much Ado About Nothing. But I think Pitt was really, really fine in that role. Again, the ones that Patel from Yesterday, I thought was overlooked. Taron Egerton, completely overlooked in Rocketman. I thought he was wonderful. So that'd be the one that I would have pushed for.
Go ahead, Amy.
You know, I think I would have added in, well, pretty much anyone from Knives Out. So Knives Out is kind of a comedy whodunit and is just packed with people who seem to be having the absolute time of their life. Daniel Craig, Don Johnson, Chris Evans, Toni Collette, Jamie Lee Curtis, Ana de Armas. Everyone's just having a blast. So like anyone from that movie could have been in any category. But also Eddie Murphy for Dolomite Is My Name. Now, we were talking about streaming. So this is a Netflix movie, and it is very funny. So it's very Hollywood, too. I'm surprised it didn't get more Academy love. It's about a comedian. It's based on a true story of a comedian who sort of wasn't having a lot of success. So he creates this very flamboyant character called Dolomite, kind of based on what his friends were calling like barbershop humor, old-fashioned humor. But it really works. It sells albums. He takes the money from the albums and he tries to make a movie, which is one of my favorite kinds of stories, is the let's make a movie movie, where, you know, people who don't really know how to make a movie come together to try to make one. So I really felt that that was a fun movie, and that was a great performance from Eddie Murphy in the lead there.
Wow, Dolomite Is My Name. I did see that as I was looking around yesterday, but you're right, it didn't get a lot of attention.
It got some Golden Globe nominations, but nothing from Oscar, which was I thought was a surprise.
All right. Well, since you mentioned Knives Out, let's go into the break playing a clip from Knives Out. This is a British whodunit with a lot of really famous, fabulous actors.
If I could pause... Why are we doing all this?
Let's back it up. The family has desperate motives. And when good people get desperate, the knives come out.
You know something. Spill it.
I suspect foul play.
And I misspoke. It takes place in Massachusetts. It is not British. I think there was one British accent in there that maybe threw me off a little bit. So that's from Knives Out. Coming up, we will talk more about the movies of 2019, and we'll take your questions and comments. What was your favorite movie of the year? What movie did you not like so much? And how has the widespread availability of streaming services affected the way that you watch? We'll hear from you in just a moment. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today it's Oscars season, and as usual, There's been lots of attention on who's been nominated for Academy Awards and who has not. We're looking back at 2019, at the movies, and we'd love to hear from you. What was your favorite film last year? And perhaps least favorite? Also, how have streaming services changed the way that you select movies to watch? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. You can use Facebook or Twitter, or you can, again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me for the hour, Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College, Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press, where she also reviews movies. And before we go to our listeners, both of you, we talked about best actor before the break, what you would choose for best actor. How about best actress, Amy? Who would you pick if you were in charge of the Oscars?
Well, I mentioned Awkwafina for The Farewell. I would definitely have thrown her in there. Julianne Moore for Gloria Bell. Maybe Constance Wu for Hustlers. I thought, you know, she did a pretty good job. Anna de Armas, again, comedies have such a hard time, but definitely her. And I think Beanie Feldstein for Booksmart. Just a really fun performance in a really fun movie. Another movie from a female director, Olivia Wilde, directed that one.
And you've mentioned The Farewell a couple times, so just remind us what that was. I saw the trailer for it, and it looked really good.
So Awkwafina plays a young woman who's kind of at like a life stasis moment, and at the same time, her family finds out that her grandmother back in China has been diagnosed with cancer. And as her parents explain, the way it works in China is that you don't tell the person with cancer that they have cancer, that that's like a thing the family carries. And so to kind of be able to see her one last time as an excuse and not tell her, they come together for what's supposed to be a cousin's wedding party. The cousin lives in Japan. It's like the two sons have one moved to Japan and one in America. They each have a child. The cousin's fiance doesn't really speak Chinese and doesn't seem to always know what's going on, which is pretty great. And then Awkwafina, because she's kind of one foot in China and one foot in American culture, doesn't quite know how she feels about this idea that her grandmother can't sort of settle her life on her own terms. And so there's a lot of, it's funny. It's way funnier than I'm making it sound. It's funny. It's poignant. It has a lot of stuff about family relationships and was just a really great movie overall. And I was really surprised it didn't end up in the best picture block.
So here's a question I always have every time the Academy Awards come around. Why isn't there a category for best comedy? I mean, frankly, if I'm going to go to the movies, I'm going to try and find a comedy because it's good to laugh. And, you know, there's some pretty grim news these days. So, Amy, you first. Why isn't there a category for best comedy?
I don't know. I wish there was.
People love comedies.
You know, I wish if comedies can't be integrated into the best picture general category for whatever reason, I wish they could get a separate category like at the Golden Globes where there's a comedy and musical category. Because you're right, those are some great movies. And I always think, you know, a perfectly executed comedy, like not to knock The Irishman, but it is harder, I think, to perfectly execute a comedy, to keep up the energy level, to have every joke hit, to have, you know, people give performances that are right for the tone. That is a lot of work. And I definitely think it should be, you know, more widely acclaimed and those movies more widely praised.
Tom?
Oh, I agree with that. Ultimately, and over the years, you know my sort of negative take on Hollywood. It's all about money and it's all about dollars. So I would agree with that. It's like, gee, if you have a nomination for best science fiction film, best comedy, you would think that would gather in more box office. I would suppose my ultimate feeling would be, where do you draw the line? Comedy is certainly a good one, but so what does best picture entail? Can they not be included in comedies? Do you have a best drama? Do you have a best... I don't know where you would draw the line with that, as specific as we might get.
Well, and it's interesting. And again, I don't work in the movie industry, obviously, but it seems like if the whole thing is to make money, the movie industry would do better, Tom, to create a best comedy category. And then a lot of people would say, ooh, that sounds like a good movie, and go. Rather than, I'm looking at the list of categories, sound mixing. Like if a movie wins sound mixing, I, as just a regular person, I'm not going to say, oh, I love sound mixing. I'm going to go see that movie now. You know what I mean? Right. So if it's all about money, it seems like it would be in their own best interest to do that.
Well, and I think that gets down to the Academy is all about just hyping themselves. No insult, because I've done sound mixing. I have friends who are recording artists, and it's really difficult. But this is just to kind of highlight. I might say also that so many people go to see movies, and most of them, you spend 2 hours, you watch the movie. Very few people realize, although I think society is finding more about what professional filmmakers do, but very few people realize that Avengers Endgame, that took 3 hours to watch, and it took 4 years to make for all these people. And if you sit and look at all the people who are involved there. So I think some of those things, like the best sound mixing, best cinematography and art direction.
The more sort of inside things.
Right, or to acknowledge these insiders and give them a little hype.
Sure, instead of the stars, which get all the attention. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, you know, and I think the Academy is wrestling with this too, because there was that 5-minute period where there was talk of a popular best picture or a best, you know, popular blockbuster movie. I think that was last year's.
Right.
And then they dropped it. And I think they kind of also realized that, look, people love Avengers Endgame. I really liked Avengers Endgame. I was watching a little bit of it this morning and I was like, oh, this was a great movie. This was so fun. You mentioned Shazam. You know, there are some great movies out there that don't necessarily fall into the sort of important film category. And I think that even the Academy doesn't quite know what to do with those movies or how to honor them or how to talk about them.
Well, and occasionally you'll see a 30-second or a 1-minute reference to, oh, also, before we had the big Oscars, there were these special Oscar ceremonies for technical achievements and things like that. So there's a lot of stuff that is an attempt to acknowledge the work that's done in motion pictures. But does the rest of the viewing world want to see that? Probably not.
Well, and that's another category that a lot of people would probably create, Tom, is best action movie.
Sure. I think that'd be great. Best superhero film. You know, do you take them seriously enough because you don't see them nominated? But they're big draws, and they're certainly fan favorites, which I think, again, the Oscar isn't necessarily interested in playing to that when we got back to the blockbuster videos or some of the more populist ones. That's where we start seeing these films nominated that basically the rest of the world likes to see.
Well, let's go to our listeners and see what they're favorites are. Again, you can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Oscar nominated or not, we'd like to hear about your favorite movies from 2019. And up first is Vaughn in Manchester. Hi, Vaughn. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Good morning, Vaughn.
Hello.
Are you there? Hi. Go ahead, Vaughn.
Yes. Okay. I'm disappointed that you dismissed Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with a great actor, Leonardo DiCaprio, and no reference whatever to Martin Scorsese's The Irishman.
Oh, we're getting there. Believe me, Vaughn. But go ahead. Those were your favorites of the year?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, these two movies are based on history, not political correctness, and therefore should be recognized.
Well, and Vaughn, I think you'll be happy to know they were widely recognized, right, Amy? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and also The Irishman, which is nominated in, I can't even add up how many categories, but it's gotten lots of acclaim. So you'll be happy about that, Vaughn. Go ahead, Amy.
Yeah, that's the Irishman is part of the kind of Netflix dominance of this year's Oscars. They're all over the place. You know, and The Irishman, here's my thing. I actually saw The Irishman in the theater. It's 3.5 hours long. So this is Martin Scorsese's kind of big saga about Frank Sheeran, played by Robert De Niro. Al Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa. And Joe Pesci. So that performance to me really was a great standout performance of Joe Pesci as a gangster. And the thing with this movie for me, I saw it 3.5 hours. I felt like so many of the details get lost. I actually think this is a case where Netflix is the better place to see it. You make it your own little sort of limited series that you take in hour
chunks. 3.5 hours. That's a long time.
It is so. And I felt like you're just sort of marching through the story. So there are all these little side stories about the Kennedys, about, you know, different elements of politics. And I feel like these little details, relationships between Robert De Niro's character and his daughter. And I feel like a lot of that kind of gets lost as you're just sort of pushing through this 3.5 hour movie. And if you sit down, in fact, I think someone online even broke it into like 40-minute chunks. Make your own little six episode miniseries, which is not how Martin Scorsese wants you to see it. But I think that actually might be the better way to see it in this case because you catch more of the details.
Well, and again, Vaughn, you'll be happy to know both Best Director and Best Picture, both of those movies, Vaughn, that you mentioned, are in those categories. So we're absolutely not overlooking those, and neither has the Academy. So thank you for calling, Vaughn. Let's go to Hollis and talk to Susan. Hi, Susan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just want to put in my bid for Jojo Rabbit.
Yes.
And the little boy who played the hero, so to speak. I thought it was a great movie, and it's difficult to categorize it. I mean, it's humorous, but it's not. I don't know if you all saw Jojo Rabbit, but I really enjoyed it.
Well, so did I, Susan, and I did see that movie. I didn't go to the movies a lot last year, but I did manage to see that one. Go ahead, Amy. She's right. You can't really categorize this movie. It's history. It's funny sometimes. It's tragic sometimes.
It is, and it's almost a movie that you're like, oh, a funny Hitler movie?
Yeah,
I don't know how
right.
I feel about this. But no, it actually, I thought it worked. You know, it reminded me of Danny Boyle. You mentioned the other Danny Boyle. It reminds me of the way he can make movies about kids where there's the kid view. So you see Jojo Rabbit. He's this boy at sort of the end of World War II in Nazi Germany. And he's kind of, as someone later says, he's a little boy who likes to wear a uniform and pretend to be brave. And he doesn't quite realize that the thing that is asking him to do that is this, you know, big, evil, authoritarian government. And so for him, Hitler is kind of a superhero character, but he sort of slowly grows his own moral compass and kind of around the edges. So you see his like fantasy world, but we see the adult world and the darkness. And I kind of feel like the movie, you know, and this is what I gravitated towards this year. The movie had a hopeful heart about humanity. And I think a lot of that was portrayed by Scarlett Johansson. She played his mother. And at one point, you know, she's talking about some resistance people. And he said, well, what did they do? And she said, what they could. And I kind of felt like that was what the movie was saying, that in dark times, you do what you can. And again, there are parts of the movie where you're like, am I supposed to be laughing at this?
Right,
this feels a little
right.
uneasy. But I thought in the end, the sweetness of the movie really came through for me.
Well, since you mentioned Scarlett Johansson, she had a really good year. There's another movie that's gotten lots of nominations that she is a star in, Marriage Story. So go ahead, Tom, tell us about that one.
I was not going to jump in on Marriage Story real quickly. One of the two comments I wanted to make on Jojo Rabbit, which I thought was overlooked, particularly for cinematography. But for people who haven't seen it, and if they're a little put off for it, if you're a fan of Wes Anderson, I always kind of equate it with that type of film. He didn't have anything to do with it, but this kind of offbeat, quirky kind of a thing.
Yeah, and funny, but not funny. And like Amy said, you're not sure if you're supposed to laugh, but then you end up feeling somewhat uplifted at the end,
right.
even though a lot of terrible
right.
things happen. So, but Marriage Story, go ahead, Tom.
Well, as a talk of my life, I'm working myself on a couple of documentaries. So since we're talking about streaming, most of my life is streaming anymore. I haven't seen Marriage Story yet.
Okay.
I feel really bad about that because I love Johansson, but I'll defer to
I haven't
to
seen it yet either,
two.
But after watching a lot of trailers, I want
them,
to. So go ahead, Amy.
It's a fun divorce
okay.
movie. that, you know, and honestly, I was sort of, when I went to go watch it, I thought, oh, it's the divorce movie. But actually, it is a really kind of sweet, again, can you say that about a divorce movie? Kind of funny, very heartfelt movie. Adam Driver, who was also nominated, and Scarlett Johansson play this couple that is coming apart, and she sort of moves to LA with their kid without him really realizing what this has meant for him. And that really, you know, you get the sense that he thought they were just going to live apart and his life would stay the same. But she moves and it really becomes, no, your life is going to change and we're going to change, but we have this kid, so we're still going to have this relationship. And again, that sounds horrible, but it's actually funnier. And in the end, kind of uplifting. There were some great supporting performances. Laura Dern, who got a nomination, she plays a divorce attorney who's just great. She's very warm, but also very like cold and calculated, a real cutthroat.
She's seen it all before.
Exactly. Ray Liotta comes in playing just like a horrible guy, but exactly who Adam Driver kind of feels like he wants at some point. And then Alan Alda plays like his soft divorce attorney who comes in and kind of is the warm hug guy. You know, again, really strong performances throughout, and it surprised me and I enjoyed it.
Good cop, bad cop, divorce lawyers. And a great performance also by the little boy. So you mentioned Adam Driver, Scarlett Johansson, Uzzie Robertson plays a little boy. Let's just play a little clip from the trailer because it really gives you a good sense of what this movie is all about.
Me and Mommy are in the middle of a super secret treasure hunt.
I thought the plane landed at 9.
What are you wearing?
Sock pants.
It did. What are sock pants?
Oh, he doesn't like to feel the breeze on his legs. He dressed himself.
There are long pants. Can I talk to you?
It's almost noon.
There's traffic. We gotta get going.
Why don't we ever do a treasure hunt?
Henry, can you wait a minute?
No talking alone.
Just one bit of talking alone, and then I'll be right there. I got a call from your lawyer. She said you'd take everything and custody and everything if I didn't respond.
It's better if we just let the lawyers do this.
Yeah, but she's saying things I don't think you mean. Henry, we need to get going.
I don't
Have you gotten a lawyer yet?
That's what I'm here to do. Come on, Henry. I'm in a rush.
I have three more clues.
Why don't you start a treasure hunt or whatever so close to my arrival?
You were late. We were killing time.
Oof, okay. That's a tough one. Marriage Story, again, a movie about a divorce, which Amy says is more warm and lighthearted.
It's funnier than it sounds.
So again, today in The Exchange, we're looking back at the movies of 2019, nominated for lots of Academy Awards or no Academy Awards. We'd like to hear from you, your favorite movie of last year, whether it's being honored next Sunday night or not. And Reeve's calling in from Wolfboro. Hi, Reeve. You're on the air. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hello. I agree with whoever said he loved Yesterday. That was a gem of a movie, and I encourage everybody to see it. But I can't believe you've gotten this far without talking about my favorite of the year, Harriet. The acting was amazing. The actress was incredible. The story's important. And I'll say something interesting is about Harriet Tubman. Anybody who worries that there's a great deal of violence, you see the results of violence, like scars and so forth, but it is actually an incredibly well-done movie about slavery, which does not, which you can take your kids to. Well, so I thought it should have gotten best film.
Well, and it directed itself.
Yes, this was another film, I think, directed by a female director.
Okay. It did get a couple nominations, right? Yeah. Well, and
Cynthia Erivo, who plays Harriet, was nominated in lead actress.
Well, and I was watching a couple trailers this morning, Reeve, and it looks fantastic. So I've committed myself to go seeing it. Let's hear a little bit from Harriet.
I don't know if you know how extraordinary this is, but you have made it 100 miles to freedom all by yourself. Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Harriet Tubman. If I'm free, my family should be too. I made up my mind, I'm going back.
Why are you back here? It ain't safe.
I come to get you. Bring all of you to freedom.
Again, that's a clip from Harriet, a movie about Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad. There's another history movie that's gotten a lot of attention this time around that we touched on, but I'd like to talk more. And perhaps to you first, Tom, 1917. This is getting a lot of attention and nominated in several categories.
Yes, a story about, and again, a period piece, and the Academy loves those. But this was so well put together. The production value and everything, I just thought it was spectacular. A period piece about some soldiers. Two soldiers who are given the mission to find a company of, I think it's like 1,500 soldiers. One of the two soldiers, his brother was among that group. So we've got a personal interest about trying to warn them that they're going to have, obviously, trouble. They're in war anyway. But they're walking into essentially a setup where the entire company is going to get eliminated. And so it's this kind of personal mission set within the larger scope of a larger war, and it's going to get a lot of hype. I think it's probably going to get Best Picture and Director.
Well, and after break, I'll ask you about how this movie was filmed, because that's part of the reason why it's getting so much acclaim. I guess it was filmed in a different way. So we'll talk about that after a short break, and we'll keep taking your calls and emails. Join us with your favorite movie from 2019 at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook. You can tweet us, and we'll be back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. This hour, the Academy Awards, looking back at 2019 in the movies amid a changing and challenging movie industry scene. Send us an email. What was your favorite movie and least favorite movie of last year? Also, how have streaming services changed the way that you watch movies? 1-800-892-6477 is our number, or you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Helping us out, Amy Diaz, editor at the Hippo Press, where she also reviews movies, and Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. And Amy, I want your thoughts, too, on 1917, because like The Irishman, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and like The Joker, which we haven't talked about yet, 1917 is nominated in many categories this year. So what else makes this movie such a big deal?
And I think it's probably expected to win Best Picture and maybe Best Directing, too, for Sam Mendes. So the way this movie is shot you know, he was saying there's a, it's a mission that these two guys are on. The movie kind of opens on these two guys and you stay with them. You're either behind them, you're in front of them. It's as though you're kind of at their eye level. It's as though you're a person with them throughout their entire mission as they go through no man's land and, you know, behind enemy lines. And it's shot as though it were one take, as though it were one shot, one continuous, with one exception, one continuous take that never turns off the camera. Now, is that really how it's shot? Probably not. And I will say that kind of like watching a magician. So for the first half hour, I was maybe trying to find the cuts. Where are the seams? Where does this movie come together? But really, you get over that. I got over that. And it's just become, it just becomes a really tension-filled movie. As you know, they have a time limit. I think they have about 12 hours or 10 hours or something that they have to do this, you know, before the next morning. And so I really liked it. It, to me, it exemplifies like everyone showed up and did their job and gave their best performance. And it all came together really well.
Let's take another call. And this is Jim calling in. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead, Jim.
So you guys were just talking about 1917. I like that movie a lot, too. But there was one part of the conceit of it, the whole thing about the, you know, continuous shot, where it just didn't make sense. And this is after the airplane scene, because like, there were guys right there. Why didn't they intervene? Otherwise, favorite movie, Ford v. Ferrari. Fantastic. Edge of my seat. Couldn't, like, I was nerve-wracked at the end of that. I was like, oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. Rocket Man, definitely was superb. Knives Out. I can't wait for the sequel. Acting-wise, Christian Bale. Superb. Joe Pesci. Like, wow. Everybody forgot about him, and all of a sudden, there he was.
Right. He's back, as Tom said earlier. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the tag team of Leo and Brad was phenomenal. I loved that. I couldn't wait. Why did it end? I wanted it to keep going.
Oh, that's great, Jim. It's good to hear from you. And he mentioned Ford versus Ferrari.
Yes.
So that's gotten some attention. It's got a couple nominations, but it hasn't gotten as much attention as The Irishman, Joker,
right.
Little Women.
I thought it was a tour de force of editing. when we're looking at sound design, I thought that was some spectacular stuff. These are areas maybe that I particularly pay attention to. But I was really kind of, you know, sort of based on a historical rivalry. But I thought it appealed to more of a niche audience. I wasn't surprised that it got nominated because it was really well done. But relative to its competition, I don't think it has a lot of shot at, you know, any big awards.
Did get nominated for sound editing, sound mixing,
yeah.
Some of those effects and so forth.
Right.
So our caller, Jim, also mentioned Rocket Man. And I think this came up a little bit earlier, but Amy, just remind us, Rocket Man came out a while ago, right? Early in 2019.
Maybe early fall?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so Taryn Egerton plays Elton John. It's basically an Elton John biopic. It was better than Bohemian Rhapsody. you know, I actually thought it used, there were parts of it that really used songs, very fun. And Taryn Egerton was a really fun actor. And it's going to win probably original song. There's an original song by Elton John and Bernie Taupin. And I think at the Golden Globes, they said they had actually never won anything together through their long career and all their hits. They'd never actually won an award. And the Golden Globes was their first. So, you know, sometimes I think in the clubbiness, you talked about the clubbiness of Hollywood, a good story, it's like a campaign. A good story can sell an Oscar campaign. And I think that's a great story. I've heard other Oscar watchers say, oh, that's a story that wins an award.
And Amy, somebody said to me that this biopic, if you can call it that, of Elton John isn't typical, that, you know, he was born here, he did this, he did this, he did this. It's told in a more creative, interesting way.
It is. It sort of works his songs in at not that, you know, it's not he's singing the song at the time that song was a hit in his life. You know, there are some songs from later in his career that he sings as a child that kind of help tell the emotions of the moment. And so I thought that was really well done. I thought that was a fun way to do that kind of a story.
Okay, let's hear a little bit from Rocket Man.
So that is a fat boy from nowhere. Get to be a soul man.
Gotta kill the person you were born to be in order to become the person you wanna be.
I'm thinking of changing my name to Elton.
But that's my name.
Yeah, I know.
And Edgerton, another one who sings his own songs in this.
Okay, just like Yesterday,
yep.
Which you were a huge fan
and
of.
And a little trivia thing for those of you who like The Kingsman, you remember those, they both appeared in the Kingsman sequel. So Elton John was one of the, was the guy who was captured.
Well, and again, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. He sounds excited about 2019
yes,
at
does.
The movie. So that's great. Give us a call like Jim did. Tell us what your favorite movies of last year were. And if you had one that you were excited about and you saw it and you thought, eh, we'd like to hear from you, too. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 1-800-892-6477. Patrick sent us an email. Patrick says, my favorite was Little Women. Took my two preteen granddaughters, and every parent and even old grandfathers like me need to show young women what others have gone through and still so much work to do. Good acting, great story, inspiring. Little Women has it all. Thank you, Patrick, for that. Doug sent us an email. A fine movie that has been given little attention is Best of Enemies, based on a powerful true story about racial reconciliation between an African-American activist and a KKK leader in the South. When people get to know each other, they begin to see past the stereotypes, a much-needed theme these days. Doug, thank you for that. Amy, I have not even heard of Best of Enemies.
That was Taraji P. Henson, right? Mm-hmm. And Sam Rockwell. And was it released in, like, the spring of 2019? So that is one of definitely an example of, like, buried and gone. You know, that was a movie that came out and then hasn't had. Sometimes those movies, those early year releases, will get like a resurgence of attention. Studios will even re-release them in theaters sort of right towards the end of the year as though like, hey, remember us. But I don't think I ever saw that one, anything about that one again.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, Doug. It sounds good. And Patrick, thank you also for emailing. Catherine says, I cannot stop thinking about director Robert Eggers' apparently little seen, unusual and haunting film, The Lighthouse, although I only learned of this film from a program on NPR. The performances by both Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson are among the finest I've ever seen. The dialogue is so intricate. I have watched this film and plan on purchasing it, something I rarely do, just to rewatch the scene where Willem Dafoe sputters out a whole vitriolic rant over Pattinson's dislike of his food. The film fits no known genre. It's an amalgam of fantasy, horror, and history, and is filmed in black and white in a square box presentation, letting it a truly eerie feel. This is a must-see, Catherine says. I'm truly disappointed that these amazing actors were overlooked. Catherine, thank you so much. And Tom, I was watching the trailer for this movie yesterday, and it did give me chills, and I'm a huge Willem Dafoe fan, so thank you, Catherine.
It's super atmospheric. The two of them are terrific. Again, it is shot in the aspect ratio is 1:3:3, like the old television, basically a box.
What does that mean exactly?
When televisions first came out, they were basically square. And so you do the height by width dimension. And so it's about one for every unit of width. You have one unit of height. That would be a 1-to-1 ratio. Obviously, when television, and so that was the way motion pictures were first made, basically square. When television came out and it had the same aspect ratio, movies started getting scared. Nobody's going to go to movies anymore. So you started expanding it, making them much wider into VistaVision or Panavision. And so we're used to now what's called 2.235 or 16:9 if you're looking at television, much wider looking images. So if people go out and do rent or purchase, I guess you can't rent a whole lot anymore, except for streaming. We can talk about that. The Lighthouse, it's like an old television. It's basically square, but just gorgeous cinematography. Again, that's my area. I just fell in love with the look of it. It's a very strange film. So not for a lot of people, but very atmospheric. And again, the two of them, I thought overlooked. Dafoe, I always think is very good. He's a quirky kind of actor. But the two of them were fine, and I think you're right that The Lighthouse was overlooked often.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for the email. So you mentioned streaming, Tom, and I want to ask both of you, Amy, you first. Many listeners may be thinking, oh, I missed The Lighthouse when it was at the local theater, or I didn't see Lives Out, or I'm thinking I missed Harriet. I don't know what was going on in my life at that point in time. But how can people see some of these movies that are getting a lot of buzz right now if they miss them at the traditional theater and they don't want to subscribe to, you know, 8 streaming services?
Yes, and a lot of the movies, Netflix has so many movies this year that definitely Netflix is one of the places to go. What's really neat about this particular Oscar season, and possibly because the Oscar ceremony was moved up and it's bunched, you know, what is even being considered into a smaller bunch, pretty much everything is either in theaters or it's available somehow to rent or purchase. The Lighthouse is actually, you can rent or purchase.
Yeah.
Which is, I actually had that on my extended 10 of Oscar nominees. It's super weird, but I think definitely worth watching. But yeah, at this point, most of the movies are in theaters, or you can rent or purchase them, or by, say, next week or so, they'll be available.
So when you say rent or purchase, though, how do you do that, Tom?
If you could go to Amazon, and this was one thing I was going to say, is that, not to push Amazon, but if you're not worried about your budget and you really want to see something early, I've noticed there are a lot of films that up 2 or 3 weeks before they're going to be released on video, so they might come up on a Netflix, or you might be able to get it at your local video store where you can purchase it. Amazon is making them available for purchase. So, like, Terminator,
so you purchase that one movie. You don't
Terminator
have to subscribe
Dark Fate
to
one.
Streaming service.
Right. I hate to say that. Right. You don't have to subscribe necessarily to it, but you can go to Amazon, and 2 or 3 weeks before it was released, you could, and I made the mistake, perhaps, of renting, purchasing Terminator Dark Fate. It was okay. I enjoyed
You're a
them.
Film professor. But, you're allowed.
Right, but you can do that. And I think that's years ago when streaming started becoming pretty popular. There was a push on and a discussion about co-releasing them, essentially. In theaters, you'd release the Star Wars on December 25th, and you could get it on video. And I haven't seen that happening, again, primarily for the box office reason, I think.
So if you miss it at the theater, if you're a Netflix subscriber, you know, chances are a lot of the movies we're talking about, you know, some of them anyway, are on Netflix. But if you can't find them at the theater and they're not on Netflix, you can do a one-time rental. You don't have to subscribe.
Usually
to
for
some
about
of
$5,
these.
$6 yeah. or so.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So, Amy, did you want to add anything about how people can access these movies? Because it's a complicated landscape for moviegoers these days, or movie watchers.
Well, so this was a big year for Netflix. So a lot of those big movies are on Netflix, not just Marriage Story and The Irishman, but also Two Popes. Two of the animated nominees, I Lost My Body, which is more of an adult movie, and also Claws, which is a kid's movie. And then I think two of the documentaries, American Factory and Edge of Democracy, and then a short, at least one of the shorts. And so that is becoming a place. And what I think actually that shows is that there's not just a few important films on Netflix, but a kind of a diversity of film. You know, you've got some animated movies, some documentaries, and even some movies. There was a movie that is definitely not nominated for anything. No offense to our local hero, Adam Sandler. But it's an Adam Sandler movie called Murder Mystery. This came out, and it was like a perfect sort your laundry, you know, relax on the couch kind of movie. It's Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. I'm pretty sure it's a 2019 release. And it's just sort of a comedy. They're a couple in Europe, and they kind of fall into a murder mystery, a family murder mystery situation. And it's, you know, it shows that Netflix is trying to, like, hit all the bases.
Yeah, and maybe with a little more flexibility than some of the mega studios.
And, well, and so, you know, if you get Disney Plus, I have kids, so by law, I have to get Disney Plus. But, you know, those are Disney movies. Well, Disney and Marvel and Star Wars. But, you know, I think there seems to be the streaming, you know, the streaming sources seem to be looking for ways to get you and keep you. And they can't get you and keep you with just one thing.
Sure.
You know?
But what I don't understand about that, and I've asked friends of mine as well, is so take a look at The Irishman, produced by Netflix, is my understanding. And so I pay $10 a month or whatever it is for Netflix. The production value of these films that these streaming services are making are unbelievable, and they're spending tens of millions of dollars. How can that be worth it? I'd just like to know the business end of it.
All right. Well, that's a subject for another time.
I guess.
Because I have two emails that I really want to share, great, both mentioning movies that have also gotten a lot of attention. Byron writes, surprised your guests have not mentioned Parasite, directed by Bong Joon-ho. Saw it last night, and it is an absorbing, disturbing, and thought-provoking study of the economic divide between the haves and have-nots. At times hysterical, at other times unsettling and subversive, it is also a beautifully shot film, exquisite cinematography. Byron, thank you so much. Amy, this movie is heavily nominated, even though it's a foreign language film, which is usually its own little niche category.
And released on Tuesday. It's already out.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. It, and I agree. I agree with everything he said. It is a really solid movie. This is the one that I purchased and saw at home because I missed it in theaters. It's almost certainly going to win international feature film. Now, it might run into the Roma trap, where they give it the prize. I think for a while, though, it was a contender for Best Picture. I think it won the Ensemble Award at the SAG, the Screen Actors Guild Awards. And it is. It's a really solid story. You know, you see the trailer and you hear everyone talk about how great it is and all the issues it discussed. It's actually also very funny. It's one of these movies that you're surprised at how funny it is and how deep you get into it before you get to not quite horror, but a really tense sort of thrillery situation. So you're really invested by the time you get to that point.
Well, and it was nominated, among other categories, for Best Director and Best Picture, which, again, is unusual for a foreign language film. So I'm so glad you wrote, Byron. And Lorraine writes from Concord, Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems. Not a huge fan of his comedy movies, but he did an amazing job in Uncut Gems. Was way outside his normal acting range. Great job. Lorraine, I did not see it, but one of my sons saw it and also said that it was that it was great. Movies in 2020? What are you looking forward to, Tom?
Oh, Wonder Woman 84.
Okay.
Can't wait for it.
All right.
Me too.
How about you, Amy?
And there's for Jane Austen fans, there's an Emma coming out in just a couple of weeks, and I'm really looking forward to that too.
All right. Thank you both for helping us out.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Amy Diaz, great to see you.
Thank you.
Amy Diaz is editor at the Hippo Press, where she also reviews movies. Tom Cook, thank you for coming
over. Always fun. Thank you.
Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.